Hello, fellow law nerds. Welcome to another episode of Boom Lawyered, a Rewired.News podcast hosted by the legal journalism team that is practicing safe social distancing. I'm Imani Gandhi.
And I'm Jess Piclo. Rewired.News is dedicated to bringing you the best reproductive rights and social justice news, commentary, and analysis on the web. And the Team Legal podcast is part of that mission. So a big thanks to our subscribers and a welcome to our new listeners.
So, Jess, we joke a lot about everything being totally bananas, but I gotta say, this coronavirus situation, it's totally freaking bananas.
Like, this is probably the one time when we can say literally bananas.
Right, like they're actual bananas falling from the sky.
Infected bananas.
Infected coronavirus-ridden bananas. But it's also really scary, which got me thinking, you know how most of the Supreme Court justices are pretty damn old?
Oh, yeah. Like Ruth Bader Ginsburg, for example. She just turned 87. Happy birthday, RBG, but stay inside, please.
And yet, I'm pretty sure she could still kick my ass. Like, I've seen her workout routine. She's kind of a badass, but 87 is not young. Mm-mm. And there's a pandemic now, and I'm stressed about RBG versus the Rona, I've got to say. I mean, my money is still on RBG. Like, the Rona really ain't got shit on her, but that's a bet I don't want to have to make.
Yeah, seriously, me either. And I guess that's why I'm extra, extra mad at Justice Kegstand for trotting off to Kentucky last week to go to, what, a swearing-in ceremony for a former clerk? I mean, we get it, right? Political payback is real. You don't have to shove it in your faces. Like, your people are getting appointments. Great. But also, don't travel in a pandemic, right? Like, we need to keep these justices alive.
All of them?
Yes, Imani, all of them, even the ones we don't like.
So I suppose that's why the court announced that it would be postponing all oral arguments set for March.
It sure is. I mean, quite simply, the coronavirus is turning all of life upside down right now, even the courts. And that's what we're going to talk about this episode. What does it mean for the Supreme Court to postpone oral arguments? Is there precedent for this kind of move? What sort of fresh hell will be unleashed by this, Imani? What are other courts across the country doing? Basically, we will try and answer the question, what the hell is going on?
Oh, that's good, because I for one would like to know. So last Thursday, the Supreme Court announced that it would be closed to the public until further notice. But by Monday, the court had announced that it would be postponing oral arguments, although the press release made it clear that the justices are still going to conference on Friday, March 20th. That's this upcoming Friday, so that they can consider new cases for their docket. And Jess, since you're the resident SCOTUS whisperer, why don't you explain what the hell is going on? Like, what is, why are they conferencing? What is, what's happening?
A lot, Imani. A lot is happening. Okay, so for starters, the Supreme Court just closed down shop, mostly. The cases that were scheduled for oral arguments in March will have to be rescheduled. The court said that it will, quote, examine the options for rescheduling those cases in due course in light of the developing circumstances, which is very court speak, which, you know, what does that mean? When is that rescheduling going to happen? We really don't have any idea.
Oh, super. This is off to a great start.
Yeah, it's sincerely, it's going to be a mess. But okay, I'll give the justices credit. They're at least trying to figure out this shit on the fly like the rest of us, right? You know? So instead of just shutting down entirely, the court is going to conference on possible cases to take for next term. And a conference is where the justices get together and basically debate which cases they want to take and why. So, you know, point there for the justices for thinking that, hey, we're even going to have a next term.
Oh, no. That's so apocalyptic.
I'm sorry. I'm in a dark space right now.
It's
kids
understandable.
Are home. I'm like learning algebra again. I don't know. It's nuts.
But some of the justices are going to participate in this conference remotely via phone because 6 of the 9 justices are over the age of 60 and this pandemic isn't so great for older folks.
That seems prudent.
Yeah, it seems prudent. Now, it's not unprecedented for the court to postpone oral arguments in the face of a health crisis. Over at SCOTUS blog, Tom Goldstein has a really good piece discussing what happens when the court has to function during trying times. Now, one thing that's interesting about the piece that Tom Goldstein wrote is that a mere day after he published the piece, it was already outdated. And that's because Goldstein was focused on how the court is going to function during times of crisis when the court is simply closed to the public.
But by Monday, as Imani said, the court had announced it was just postponing arguments entirely, and that's unprecedented.
But still, Goldstein's article is interesting and worth discussing.
So one thing that sets SCOTUS apart from other government institutions is that the court places a lot of weight on consistency and functioning, even if other governmental institutions are shut down. So, for example, during the 2016 snowpocalypse, you remember that, Imani?
I remember the Snowmageddon.
Or Hurricane Sandy, there's another one. The court was open for argument even though the rest of the government at those times had shut down.
But as Goldstein notes in his piece, and as the announcement on Monday confirms, the coronavirus pandemic is a different beast and is more akin to the Spanish flu of 1918 than it is to the snowpocalypse or to Hurricane Sandy.
And that was the flu that wiped out like half the world's population, basically, right?
Well, not half the world's population. Okay. But it did wipe out a lot of people. It's the deadliest pandemic in history, and according to some research that I did on history.com, it infected 500 million people worldwide, which is about one-third of the population of the planet. And it killed somewhere between 20 and 50 million people.
Okay, hold on. I mean, you know it's a pretty bad pandemic when there's a 30 million person disparity between the lower and upper limit of the fatalities. I mean, 20 million, 50 million, there's no number in there that's more precise.
If you hate that, get this. Some estimates say that 100 million people died.
What?
And that's 3% of the world's population.
We're just grabbing numbers.
Yeah, pretty much.
Spanish flu lottery.
Like, exactly.
I mean, you know, 20 million, 100 million, that's the best these people can do? Really? Good grief.
Well, there was no vaccine at the time, and medical record keeping wasn't what it is today, which really, like, they didn't have computers back then. Get it together, 1918. But I digress. So here's the deal. The coronavirus is a disaster for older people. And since the Supreme Court bench is stacked with older people, this country just can't afford for these justices to get sick.
Can't they, though?
I mean, look, I don't wish anyone ill. All I know is that Breyer and RBG better stay alive at all costs.
Okay, so they're postponing arguments, but why, Imani? Couldn't they just do them all by video conferencing?
Or via text message even, right? Like all the lawyers would have to make their arguments using emoji. And if anyone used an eggplant emoji, they would immediately get sanctioned. But seriously, or like the peach emoji, ass cheeks and eggplants.
I'm just imagining Justice Alito posing a question as a bunch of like the poop emojis. Justice Alito's questions are only poop emojis. I'm sorry.
And then Clarence Thomas would just be that one with the zipper over his mouth.
Or like the text bubble when you see them typing, but they never actually send anything. We've lost it, listeners.
But seriously, we're getting back on the rails. The reason that the court is postponing arguments, according to this article by Tom Goldstein, is that if they were to have them, but to keep the court closed to the public, then they'd be holding public proceedings with no public. Because you have to remember that oral arguments before the Supreme Court are public proceedings.
I got another question for you, Imani.
Hit me.
Why not just live stream the arguments then? I mean, the D.C. Circuit live streams oral arguments. It's not like our nation's capital doesn't have the capability to do this.
Right, but if they do that, then like a lot of measures this country is taking to slow the spread of the virus, the public might wonder why this hasn't been happening the entire time, right? The public might wonder why oral arguments aren't always live streamed. And the court just really doesn't want to have that fight because they don't want to live stream oral arguments.
They really don't. And I mean, you know, remember when we had the impeachment trial like 40 lifetimes ago?
Yeah, when was that? I feel like I was like 20 then.
You know, Chief Justice John Roberts was presiding over that and within like an hour had been memed. And so I'm sure that he's not really eager to like get on with that. But you know what? Hey, SCOTUS, live stream oral arguments, always. It's a function of democracy. We should all be able to see what's happening in your court. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk.
So what's going to happen? Some of these arguments are scheduled for March and they could be postponed to April. Three of the argument dates that are set in April only have one argument scheduled for that day, so they could just essentially cram more arguments into those days.
Totally.
Also, the court could add additional argument days. Generally, we think of April as being the last month for arguments and June as being the last month for decisions, but it's not like that's set in stone in the Constitution or anything, so the court can just change its schedule. And you know what? We could even have oral arguments during the summer. Won't that be fun for you, Jess?
Going to D.C. hot and sweaty? Oh, that sounds amazing. I mean, I'm sweaty by default, but at like 95 degrees and 82% humidity and like I'm blotting from here. It's going to be
well,
great.
It's considering great. That the birth control case is scheduled for the end of April, if the court remains closed, you might get to go be hot and sweaty in D.C. to cover those arguments. And I'll be here in California where it's a cool 65 degrees and I'm housebound.
Amani, we're in the middle of a pandemic. Yeah. And yeah. I would think that this would be a time to show some kindness. Not to rub my nose in the fact that I might be up to my eyeballs in boob sweat at the birth control cases. So thank you.
My apologies, my friend. I apologize truly.
It's okay. I mean, seriously, the pandemic, we're all a little loopy right now. But the birth control benefit case is pretty important. And there are cases on the court's docket that are actually important considering we have a presidential election coming up, like, oh, the fact that the court was slated to hear arguments on Trump's tax returns on March 31st. Kind of a big deal.
Kind of. I guess that's important. But do we really think the Supreme Court, which seems to be acting as Trump's bitch right now, is going to force him to turn over his tax returns?
I mean, no, I don't, but it's still an important case and they
That's
should
true.
Hear
That's
arguments
true.
On it.
That is true. That is true.
Like, we should still vet the issue.
That's true.
So the court could hear those arguments at the end of April, for example, and then, you know.
And then tell Trump he doesn't have to turn over his tax returns at the beginning of May, because what even is this farce?
Amani, you're pretty cynical.
That's why you love me. I'm cynical. You're sweaty. We should do a show at Red Rocks. Introducing Cynical and Sweaty live and in person for the first time.
Oh, God.
Oh, God. I'm losing it. But I have a bit of a morbid question. Is it possible that this pandemic might be useful insofar as it slows down the Trumpification of the courts?
Oh, that is a fantastic question. But not if Mitch McConnell has anything to say about it, Amani, unfortunately.
Damn it.
Mitch. Yes, Senator Turtle is going to muck it up. Last year, we wrote a piece about how the Republican takeover of the federal judiciary was almost complete, and McConnell's strategy, with an assist from his sidekick, Chuck Grassley, was simple. Stall as many nominees chosen by President Barack Obama as possible. Then, by either disregarding or outright changing Senate rules governing the confirmation process, rush through President Donald Trump's nominees.
After spending 3 years filling seats with young conservatives, McConnell is ready to pick off the geezers and replace them. He's asking judges appointed in the Reagan and Bush 1 and Bush 2 eras to step down, or at least consider stepping down, so that he can fill those slots with 25-year-old numpties handpicked by the Federalist Society.
Yup. The New York Times reported that McConnell has been quietly promising older justices that he'll replace them with an ideological successor, but basically to get the hell out while Republicans still have the Senate and the White House.
So does that mean they're nervous about the 2020 election? Like, what's going on here?
I think so. I mean, certainly the administration's bungling of the coronavirus response doesn't bode well for them. And I think this is McConnell's way of saying, hey, we have power now. We got to really use it.
But then again, Trump could probably lick every doorknob in the White House and his base would still hail him as their king. I mean, I'm just saying. So how many judges are we talking about here, Jess?
Well, according to the Article 3 Project, which is a right-wing group dedicated to installing Trump judges.
I have to interrupt. Their website is ridiculous. I was reading this. I was like, the Article 3 Project? I wonder what that is. And I went to good old Google.com and found this shit. The Article 3 Project, A3P, because it's got to have like a cutesy name. The Article 3 Project fights for the confirmation of President Trump's judicial nominees. We defend new judges against left-wing attacks. We protect the integrity of the confirmation process. We oppose the Democrats' radical court packing, term limit, and judicial impeachment schemes. I mean, really? Sure, Jan. Sure.
That is some, like, alt-right fashy nonsense. Like, that sounds... Wow, they sound super swell.
Yeah, yeah.
But according to their tally, there are more than 90 judges nominated by the Reagan and Bushes who are eligible to take senior status. And so senior status is like quasi-retirement. Their slot can be filled, but the judges still receive full pay, and they can hear cases and hire clerks.
I honestly don't understand the point of that. Is it just kind of like a promise that they will leave as soon as their slot is filled, or what's the deal?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, think of them as like the reserve squad of federal judges, basically, or like
second string judges.
Yeah, you know, like the, I don't want to say JV because they're like well accomplished, but they're like, right. You know, there for backup. Or like, I don't know if this was the case when you were in practice, but did you have those senior partners who would like still come into the office and like turn on their computers and like maybe dictate a memo to the file, but like nobody really knew what they did? But if you like needed a pleading to be signed or something, it was good to have them around.
Yeah. We
basically,
had those.
Like judges on senior status are kind of like that. Like you're happy to have them when you need them.
Well, I mean, this might just be me. And, you know, Lord knows I'm a little bit cynical. But I feel like that these Republicans should focus on getting their shit together when it comes to the pandemic response rather than barreling ahead with trying to take over the courts.
I mean, I would say that's fair, especially considering the chaos that court closures are causing. And it's not just SCOTUS that's shutting down. Courts at every level, state and federal, are shutting down because of coronavirus.
And if that happens, then there are going to be delays in trials. Now, delays in civil trials, not that big of a deal. Delays in criminal proceedings, when people are languishing in jail, waiting for an arraignment or a jury trial, that can't happen because a packed courtroom is practically a petri dish.
Well, jails are petri dishes too, Imani.
Yes, yes, they are. And you know how this country loves its carceral solutions and doesn't really give a flying fuck about people in jail.
Mm-hmm.
I literally read somewhere that prisons are trying to sanitize areas, like common areas in prisons, which like, good luck with that. Like how, you've got prisoners stacked nuts to butts. Like, what are you going to do? How is this going to work?
Impossible.
Impossible indeed. And you know, the Bay Area right now is on lockdown. Like we're in a shelter in place ordinance where we're basically not allowed to leave our houses. And one of the punishments for disobeying the lockdown is jail time.
What?
Which doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me.
I have some questions.
Maybe. But like, why don't you just inject people who violate the shelter in place order with the Rona and just save everyone some time?
Yeah, it doesn't seem like putting more people in jail is going to slow the spread of the virus. But I mean, I'm not an epidemiologist.
Yeah, I'm not either, but I think you might be correct. But the point is, we're just starting to see the impact that the Rona is having on the courts, and it's chaos, basically.
Our federal judiciary was already under-resourced and overstressed. And I mean, as it stands, it can take years from the time that someone files a lawsuit in federal court to the time that they have a trial. Years. Staffing concerns as people get sick, backlogs on schedules, like the impact on all of this, it's going to be really messy.
And you know what? State courts are in an even tighter spot financially. Mm-hmm. It's why we're starting to hear calls for things like a moratorium on evictions. Just having those kinds of proceedings is going to put people at risk, let alone the moral calculus about whether we should be evicting people in the middle of a pandemic.
And our immigration courts. Here in Colorado, we have an immigration judge who just went on self-quarantine after showing signs he was sick from coronavirus. So there's going to be delays in our immigration courts as well. And I mean, that system is barely hanging on by a thread, if at all.
Right. And you know, Trump is just moving forward with these ICE roundups. They're rounding up people and then putting them in lines, stacking them not 6 feet away from each other. It's just kind of like, oh, I can't handle it. It's too much. Can we just end the episode now? We got to end the episode now. I can't do it.
With like a kitten.
Yeah. Yeah. Just think of a kitten on a brand. It's like, hang in there. Basically like Pete Buttigieg's whole campaign.
Oh, man. That was like 10 lifetimes ago.
Right. Remember Pete Buttigieg?
Remember Pete Buttigieg?
Who the fuck is Pete Buttigieg anymore? God. Oh, right, so that's going to wrap it up for us. But before we go, Jess, did you know that Rewire.news is a nonprofit and we depend on donations to keep this podcast and all of Team Legal's coverage going?
I did. And Imani, did you know that you can go to rewire.news/boomgive to donate? Seriously, folks, we appreciate your support so much. If this coverage is important to you in this wild time, we hope that those of you who can throw us a couple bucks will throw us a couple bucks to keep us streaming through your ear holes.
The link is rewire.news/boomgive. That's rewire.news/boomgive.
And it's also in the show notes in your app.
You should follow us on the Twitters at Angry Black Lady. That's me at Hegemommy, Hegemommy. That's Jess. You should join our Facebook group. Answer the questions. If you can't answer the question, just say something that might make Jess and I realize that you're not some sort of anti-choice numpty and that you like us on Twitter or appreciate work or, you know, you're a big fan of abortion rights, yada, yada. Oh, we still have our series is out now that you're on lockdown, yes. Probably now that you're self-isolating, you know, it's a good time to listen to We'll Hear Arguments. You can binge that series in 2.5 hours. It's like bing, bang, boom. We'll Hear Arguments in your face, in your ear holes. It's amazing. Please go subscribe and listen.
Perfect time to binge.
And Jess, do we have anything else?
She's I don't looking have anything
at me
else.
Like, she's looking at me like, bitch, who are you? I don't even know why we're here. All right, that's going to wrap it up for us. Jess, what are we going to do?
We're going to see you on the tubes, folks.
She didn't even know the answer to that question. You're like, I don't know. Go outside and panic. We'll see you on the tubes, folks.
Boom Lawyered is created and hosted by Jessica Mason Piglow and Imani Gandhi. Mark Folletti produces the show.